From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in November 1984, Election Day. President Ronald Reagan won a landslide victory over Walter Mondale, losing only Mondale's home, Minnesota. That means that Reagan won states that most of us wouldn't dream Republicans can win anymore. And writing for National Review Online, conservative writer Kevin Williamson laments this, saying, quote, Ronald Reagan of Los Angeles won New York and California both in 1984. In 2018, Ted Cruz can't win the Texas city that he lives in. End quote. Williamson is pointing out a problem for modern Republicans and conservatives. We often hear discussions about how Democrats and progressives can improve their numbers in America's rural areas, which are dominated by Republicans. Williamson turns that around, arguing that conservatives have essentially given up on America's cities, and that's a big problem. I'll read now from Williamson again. Quote, when is the last time we asked them what they like about Brooklyn and Austin? When is the last time we considered their personal and cultural aspirations with anything other than resentment, contempt, and outrage? Americans, in particular the younger ones, don't seem to be getting our conservative message. The best and brightest of them keep going to the colleges we hate, studying for the professions we hold in suspicion or contempt, and dreaming of moving to cities that we'd be content to see washed into the sea. Republicans do very well with people who drive an F-350 to work, and God bless them. Republicans, and more important, conservatives, do not seem to have very much to say to people who take the subway to work, which is a real missed opportunity. End quote. So what can conservatives do to win over Americans who want to live in cities? Why is there such a divide? Our guests this hour are all folks who work in local political strategy, and they have long resumes themselves, and I'll welcome them now. Don Riley is vice president of Mark IV Enterprises. I'm also the former supervisor of the town of Greece, and most proudly, he says, the former CEO of the Regional Transit Authority. Nice to have you back here.
Evan, thank you.
And the Regional Transit Authority, I happen to know, is in one of America's cities, in Rochester.
It's in one of America's great cities, Rochester, New York.
Well, nice to have you back.
Thank you, Evan.
Tom Hebert is a Federal Affairs Associate for Americans for Tax Reform. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan. Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you. And welcome back to Aisha Kreutz, who is a local activist and founder of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of New York. Nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And tell us what the Frederick Douglass Foundation of New York is.
We are a educational organization, for the most part, in political policy. So we do a lot with going into the hardest hit areas and spreading the message of conservatism.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. I want to go around the table and ask all of you if you agree with Williamson's sort of larger message that he's sort of lamenting conservatives kind of giving up and just casting scorn at America's cities instead of saying, what are we going to do to reach them more often? Don, does he have a point there?
He's sort of cynical in his writing.
And do me a favor, Don. Turn that mic right at you there.
Is that better?
That's better.
It was a little cynical, the article was, but I sort of applied it to Rochester and thinking back. One of the advantages of age is I remember when Rochester was led by Steve May in a full Republican city council, and that was in the 60s. It wasn't that long ago. And that was post-riot. We had riots in 64. I was a teenager. So I kind of applied what he was talking about here and tried to think about, well, what has Rochester gone through? And where have conservatives maybe either failed or given up the fight or whatever? Fast forward a little bit to when I was at the Transit Authority, there was a Republican shift in attitude towards public transportation. And that shift came with a realization that there was an awful lot to be had with supporting public transportation funds, and that the public transportation needs of the city were now transferring to some of the larger ring suburbs. So Republicans who used to be against public transportation, apparently because it was, and by the way, the leader in the House of Representatives against public transportation was a congressman from Texas who, Tom DeLay.
Oh, we know that.
Yeah. Oh, my God, right?
Yeah.
And so in the early years when I was at the Transit Authority, my earlier years there was battles with him. He just didn't see a bus or public transportation that he didn't hate.
Why was it that Republicans were against public transportation?
I think they thought it... almost an anti-suburban type function of billions of dollars. You know, the federal transportation budget is in the $400 billion number. It's a big one. But once they realized that it was roads, bridges, and buses, they started recognizing the political advantages of being in favor of it and creating jobs and infrastructure, and on it went.
But, and so do you see that, if you saw that shift when you were at the Transit Authority, at least in some of the GOP sentiment about public transportation, what about cities writ large here?
Well, I just think Republicans / conservatives have just not had the energy to put good candidates up. I think there should be good candidates for school board in the city. Republican conservative candidates taking their message, at least trying their message out. They've sort of given up the ground. And
yes,
now
they
have. Pardon me?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Now in Monroe County, the ground is shifting, and now there's insurgencies in Pittsford and other Republican areas.
We're losing the suburban areas like Pittsford, town boards and stuff as well. You look at that last election, you know, they thought we were pretty solid in Pittsford, and then who are the two that came in on the town board for Pittsford? And they are about as left progressive as you get. And, you know, I think that the Republican Party has a messaging issue, definitely. And I think that that is spreading. But I think that, Don, I think you're right, that we've given up.
Well,
they don't, you know, we don't fit in this mold, I guess, right? Because it's so hard, right? Nature abhors a vacuum. And when we left a vacuum, and what filled it? You had all those progressive messages come in. Now we have to kind of come back into that platform or these cities and say, okay, we have a message, and we're not running candidates. We're not doing anything, you know, again, and the answer somewhat seems to be, okay, let's give you a candidate that looks more like what you're used to seeing over the last 20 or 30 years versus having a stark contrast and saying, no, we actually believe this, and going head at it and having those actual conversations. And I think people appreciate that more. That's what I found, is when I can have an honest conversation about our differences. You know, we don't come from the same place. And a lot of times, unfortunately, I guess, we don't want the same things.
Okay. And so I think what Ayesha's talking about, there's Pew research on that, which I'm going to get to, which is interesting, which indicates where people live in this country often is a sign of their politics more than it was a generation or two generations ago. So you go back to the 60s.
Yep.
And so the question becomes, is this intractable, or can you make a dent? And before I get to Tom's thoughts on this, real quick, when you think America's cities, what's the first word that comes to mind?
America?
Okay. Don?
Struggling.
Okay. Tom?
Liberal.
Okay. So liberal. So, and they are largely liberal.
Absolutely.
And so what happens here for conservatives? Can you win there again?
We can. The problem, as I see it, is we're falling into the trap of the Democratic Party in that we're becoming a party that is so lockstep around one agenda that we're shutting out some of the more diverse voices, right? Like, just in this past congressional election, you saw a lot of Northeast Republicans get destroyed, and you saw a lot of Republicans in California get destroyed. So I'm a conservative. I'm not a moderate guy. But there is room for moderate voices in the party, like a Susan Collins, like a Lisa Murkowski, like the late John McCain. And what I think over the past decade, because we did pick up, I mean, we're ignoring the fact that we picked up a little over 1,000 seats in state ledges and all that stuff during Obama's tenure. So we have gained ground in the past decade. And I think a large part of that was we were able to have different messages in different parts of the country. Now it seems that we all have to unite around one message that may not work in all areas of the country. And the problem is you're shutting out a whole section of the party that could win in places like California, in the northwest or northeast,
and in cities,
too. Yeah,
right. But is that more of a problem? You know, that for me, that is more of a societal problem, because the message, you know, again, if we divide that line between conservatism and Republican, right, and say the Republican Party and conservatism, right, they're mm-hmm. different there.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
so the Republican Party
is the ideology. The Republican Party is just a tent.
That's right. And so you can have the Republican Party and have all of these different various mm-hmm. ideologies within it. Yeah. But when we're talking about going into cities, and because, right, you'll have a more progressive Republican now, right, which to me is they don't go together.
Well,
but what we're seeing now is that the Republican Party, instead of going in and teaching conservatism or teaching this ideology,
sure.
we're giving ground and saying, hey, we can bring in more people into our party if we moderate to one way or another, instead of having yeah. so much confidence in, you know what, I actually have a solution to what some of these problems are, and
sure.
we're giving that sure. part away.
Well,
it begs at the city level, not at the congressional level or maybe or the national level, it begs the question is there really a Republican, conservative, or Democratic way to plow snow? And maybe policing may be some issues, or even education. Is there really?
Yes.
And so New York State is an ancient state as far as organizations and governments go. It's not one of the, it was one of the earlier states. I mean, there's towns on Long Island that are almost 400 years old. I mean, but is there a, so when I was in Greece, was there a conservative way for me to plow Long Pond Road? No. There's an efficient way. And Republican candidates, instead of getting hooked up with a national ideology that doesn't mean a damn thing to Rochester, New York, or the suburbs, they ought to maybe be talking about, I think we could do a better job, you know, public works, public safety, planning, drainage, police. And when you get to education, that's maybe where the rubber meets the road, when you have a different approach towards educating our kids or getting performance
or
success.
Right, I mean, like low-hanging fruit is there's no reason why Republicans shouldn't have school choice.
Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. In the 70s, Paul Haney, who was a city council colleague, proposed an income tax for people who lived outside the city who came and worked in Rochester.
Oh, God.
And on this radio station, he and I had this conversation. I said, well, turn out the lights in the city. I mean, do you want me to put a toll gate up on Ridge Road West? I mean, believe it, we're in it together, but Republicans, I think, can win in the city, believe it or not, if they propose a better way to handle the city's problems. Not the political philosophy.
Right. It's not. Well, again, ideology is you've looked at something and said, hey, this works. Right. Again, like school choice, low hanging fruit. And we give that up. Right. That is.
What do you mean
winning,
we give that up?
Well, we don't go at it the way that it needs to. For a little while we did. And we had some different people in various places. Again, look, DeVos. Right. She was uh-huh. against school choice forever. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's like, oh, yeah, DeVos. And you're just like, what are you talking about? She's uh-huh. has a more globalist ideology as it comes to uh-huh. education. Right. We as Republicans in going saying school choice is a winning issue. It is a winning hands down issue for people in the city. You go in there and you start talking about parental rights, school choice, but the unions have such a lockstep on it that what do? We back away from it. As soon as we start getting a little bit of, you know, pushback, instead of us taking that ideology and saying, no, this is actually the better way. If we allow these parents who, I don't care if you're poor or you're rich, you care about your kids, you care about education. That's a low hanging fruit. As much as you talk about, hey, go in here. We have some ideas. We can help this situation. Mm-hmm. What do they want to do? They want to back away from it because that is a hard fight. You're going to get destroyed for a little while before you win that one. But the parents will come around you.
Isn't the fundamental problem with schools, not just city schools, but some suburban schools?
All of them, yeah.
Performance. So if you think performance is related to school of choice, then you'd first school of choice. But the buildings in the city and the buildings in the suburbs and the teachers in the city and the teachers in the suburbs are virtually the same with quality. Mm-hmm. I've been in and out of both sets of schools.
Me too.
Reason for performance is not the buildings and not the
teachers.
That's
right. Agreed.
And to some extent, not the students. And that's where you can identify the problem. But I'm not so sure school of choice, the parents related to the school of choice would be good conscientious parents even if the kids went to public schools. They'd be wanting to talk to the teachers. They'd be wanting to make sure the kids performed well. But there's this whole gap of students who don't have parents, abiding parents.
Well, yeah, but you've also had a system for 30 years that have told the parents that they're not welcome here, that this, that the government and the schools, they for 30, 40 years now have said, we've got this. We know how to educate your kids. Oh, don't worry about it, right? And then so you have a whole, in Rochester, right, if you're graduating 15-20% of functionally literate people, then after a few generations, they can't even read the book to their kid. So there is a gap there. But we have an answer for that where we can come in and say, and it's not a government solution, right? It is going back, because even if you can't read, you still want your kid to read, right? We can look at Dr. Ben Carson or some of these other people. There are solutions to it. The problem that I see is we're not willing to take those solutions and bang it out. Yeah. It's almost like a, I liken it to a absentee father, right?
What is the problem you're identifying? Is it the teachers?
Them.
Is it the buildings? Is it the curriculum?
The buildings, you can go to Africa and people care about, they don't even have a building very well educated.
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's a building issue. I think there's a curriculum problem. I think that the system itself,
the curriculum results in poor performance and
poor
graduation
rates. No, I think it's one of them.
Rates.
There's a whole multitude of reasons for poor performance in schools. One is curriculum. The curriculum, not having a choice in curriculum, right?
I think Don is blaming the families. That's what I'm hearing.
What I'm begging for, mm-hmm. I'm not blaming. I'm begging that we peel back the onion and peel back. It's not the buildings, it's not the teachers. To some extent, I didn't like Regency either. I had to take. I didn't like it because I had to work really hard to take those exams. But the difference in performance. And I'm not even blaming the families.
Some of the families are to blame.
Back to the Williamson piece.
But this is relevant.
I'm not blaming the families, but I think we've got to engage. I think we've got to identify and engage what the real problem is, and we don't. We fight about all the side issues.
Well, what's the real problems? Name it. Is it poverty?
Poverty is the problem.
Okay.
Poverty is the problem.
How is poverty a problem? I grew up poor.
Well, I can tell. I grew up very modestly too. I can tell you how it could be a problem, and it's systemic.
I was in my mid-20s.
I know, and you worked your way out of it, but you can't.
There's plenty of smart poor people though, and plenty of people that are.
You can't tell me to will myself if I have no support from virtually any place. You can't tell me to will myself first through school. Work part-time, then will myself through MCC, and then will myself and will. There are people who can get through that.
But you can. You know what the problem is the system is continuously, the people, the teachers, the system, the curriculum, you know what they tell you all the time, especially if you're from the inner city? You can't. You can't do that. You're not going to get out. Why would I put a value on education, right? I hear it all the time. I work with the kids all the time, right? Why would I put a value on education? If no matter how smart I am and no matter what I am, I'm still not going to make it. And that's what they tell these kids all the time, right? Is it, you work hard and you know what? But the system is rigged against you. And therefore.
Do you think Democrats are actually telling kids, even if you work hard, you won't make it?
All the time.
Really?
I hear it all the time. You can sit in a classroom and you right? And the society, right? It's that pressure everywhere it comes, especially being black. Right? It was like, oh, the system's rigged against you. The white man's not for you, blah, blah, blah. You can go, you can do all of these things, but in the end. And what's the other issue that they tell you? Again, education and the messaging that we have to get into, right? They'll go into hearing constantly, right? You're poor. What are you going to do, right? You're going to go from school to prison. So then why should I go to school? What is the purpose of school?
So you're saying political left messaging saps the will.
Absolutely.
I do. For students, young
students,
to succeed.
Not
students of color, students in poverty.
I know plenty of good Democrat teachers. Okay, so it's not, but yes, the ideology of the left saps that will. Like he was saying, you can't will, right? It was like, you can't, I mean, you can will yourself, you can will yourself, but when you have so much pressure coming at you all the time, and every single angle is telling you that no matter what you do, and then what do they tell you? The reason that you get a good education is what? So that you can make money, right? That's what they tell you. That's a lie. I do not get an education, because if I was going to do that, why don't I just be a drug dealer if it's about getting money?
Okay, well, so look, I think we've touched some nerves already here, and so let me reset why we're here, and then I'll, you know, we're going to start working through some of the feedback we've gotten, because we won't spend the whole hour on education, but what I do hear from our guests, Aisha and Don are offering at least, and all three of our guests are offering their own ideas for how conservatives can win in cities again. Don is saying, take away the national ideology, maybe the social wars, and turn this into an efficient government. Who can plow your streets the most efficiently? Who can be there when you need them? Who picks up the trash on time? And who does it for the lowest cost to your tax dollars? Don is saying if you appeal that way, that's a compelling message everywhere you go, and it should be in cities. Aisha is saying there are many issues, particularly for you know, sort of impoverished communities, to say why is this stagnation happening? Who's responsible? Can school choice, can other issues impact that? There's an idea. In a second, I'm gonna allow Tom to grab the mic too, because we've had a punching match a little bit here.
No,
no, I actually think it's interesting. But listeners,
I love Alicia.
I know. We.
So if you want to jump in, listeners, if you want to jump in, you can call the program toll free 844-295-TALK. If you are a progressive living in one of America's cities, call us and tell us what it would take to get you to turn your vote. To either become a conservative or vote for Republicans, 844-295-8255. And Carl in Brockport is the first to weigh in, so let's get him first. Go ahead, Carl.
Hi, thank you for this really interesting show.
Sure.
Thank you to your guests also. I'm very interested to hear some of the comments, just because I think I'm listening to a liberal based on some of the comments I'm hearing, which is refreshing, I have to say. But my basic point I want to make here is that I'm a little bit put off by some of what I'm hearing, because it sounds to me like the guests are as interested in messaging as they are in actual programs, actual answers to problems. And in that regard, I have to say the problem that the Republicans are having nationwide in urban centers is that they haven't got a product. They haven't got a product to sell. Most of what they offer is pretty nonsensical, actually, and I think most people in cities actually see that. So thank you for the chance to speak my voice.
Carl, thanks for the phone call. Let's go around the table. Tom, do you agree or disagree there?
I mean, I don't know what he's talking about when he's saying pretty nonsensical, but the Williamson piece is half the answer, right? And I mean, he's an opinion writer. He doesn't have to offer balance. But I think the other half is liberals and conservatives are generally intolerant of each other's perspectives now, especially in the past couple of years. I live in Washington, right? In my neighborhood, they're banning leaf blowers, right? There's a new ride-sharing tax. They're trying to raise money for Metro. There's all these crazy things that are going on in Washington. But one really cool thing that's going on, and this is where I think the future is, the left and right can kind of work together, is there's a transportation issue in Washington, right? The Metro, every time you go on, it's a crapshoot whether or not you're going to die in a fire. People have gone to Uber. And the problem with Uber is, I mean, I have no problem with it personally. I think it's a great company that offers great service without government involvement, but it's crowding up the streets. So there's a traffic problem now. So recently, dockless bikes and scooters have come out. And this appeals to the left and right in different ways. It appeals to the left because you're obviously reducing the carbon footprint by a lot, and you're taking cars off the roads. And to the right, it's not really heavily regulated by the government. It's very
innovative, entrepreneurial.
Innovative, entrepreneurial, and it's individualistic. It's not like public transportation, right? It's awesome. You going from point A to point B.
Yeah.
Without any regulation, without any, you know, licensing or anything like that, if you were driving a normal scooter. So left and right can work together on solutions that help people. But right now, I don't think the left and the right are hearing each other that much. And, you know, especially going into 2020 with how divisive our politics has gotten, I don't think this is the most divisive it's ever been. When people used to threaten, when candidates used to threaten to kill each other in the newspaper, like in the 1800s.
Or right on the congressional floor, right?
Yeah.
Hit each other with canes.
But I just don't see, like, if a liberal caller or a conservative caller calls in and says, you know, I don't really think there's much we can do as conservatives to get them to come to our side, right? Without having a different message for different areas, all under one tent.
So, but what would be a message for Rochester then? Because you've worked on campaigns, but let's just say you're working on a city campaign, knowing that the last time Rochester had a mayoral election, you had a Republican candidate, Tony Michiké, who is now a Democrat. And often you have a debate about whether it's worth even running a candidate, given the demographics, given the voter rolls, et cetera. You want to run a Republican candidate, what's the messaging, not just the messaging to Carl's point, what's going to work that's going to improve lives that you think from a conservative perspective will win over currently liberal or progressive voters?
I would be, and this would be my advice to any candidate, Republican or conservative, you know, the media generally is not going to help you spread your message. You have to make an affirmative case for the policies that you want to promote. You have to say, I think free markets are good. I think that free people is a good thing. I believe in strong families and strong communities, and I believe in all the good things that make this country the greatest in the world. But if I were running a city campaign, I would skew more towards the Don Riley method of, okay, I'm gonna perform the function of this office better because X, Y, and Z. You know, it's not so much about, you know, you have to be a Reagan conservative in every election, which I am. I understand I'm a conservative, but you have to have different messages for different parts of the country, especially when you go into the cities. I just think conservatives let themselves be painted into this corner of like the Grinch that stole Christmas, right? Like they're trying to take your health care away. They're trying to do this or trying to do that. And conservatives don't make an affirmative case. Like look at Obamacare, for example.
Look at one of the given up on.
Well, sure. Absolutely. We just had
Obama's not in. So, hey, why not give it to him?
I mean, we just had number one, you need 60 votes in the Senate to get rid of it. But that's another thing.
We have a great deal maker, though. Sorry.
Instead of pleading their case for a free market healthcare system that's based around competition and putting patients in the driver's seat,
right,
we're relying on courts to strike a law down.
Exactly.
And that's the problem.
I agree.
We're not making an affirmative case for our own policies.
Right.
And I think you and I agree on that.
Yes, I agree.
What I'm saying is it doesn't have to be a one-size-fits-all message for all 50 states.
That is true.
The Democrats did that, and they almost electorally themselves into oblivion.
Right, and I agree 100% with what you're saying. And as well, though, again, winning in the city, I mean, one of our issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do it all the I do this all the time. Like, this is one of my ways that if I don't tell someone if I'm a Republican or a Democrat and I have the same exact conversation, guess what? They'll agree with me 80% of what I have to say. It's the moment that I come out and I'm like, well, you know, again, I took a while for me to come out the closet as a Republican.
Sure.
Okay. I was in my 30s and, you know, it was tough. I cried when I realized I was a Republican. Okay.
So, tears of joy, I hope.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I was like, oh my gosh, this can't be true. But in that, right, it's because I didn't even understand that the ideology that I had was a Republican ideology, right? But it was those people because there was a message. And I'm like, oh, wow. Because there was more of a willing, kind of what you guys were talking about before, right? There was more of a willing for us to have a dialogue and for people to be honest about what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that actually makes sense. That's actually what I grew up, right? Self-sufficient, you know, all these
different
things. Individual responsibility. And I'm like, well, you just don't know what you're talking about. You're saying this as though you're Republican, but I grew up Democrat, and so what you're saying is wrong. And then
back to what we were saying earlier about you think that the Democrat Party is kind of sapping voters of, you know, their individual autonomy over their situation. That was, I think, the defining message between us and the Democrats, right? Is that we believe in individual responsibility. We believe that you can move yourself up ladder.
Up and down, in and out of economic status.
Without
absolutely
the government's assistance, right?
Correct.
And I think in this populist wave, we've kind of, I mean, without putting too fine a point on it, we've kind of lost that message. I think that's a big part of the Williamson piece that we haven't talked about, is that conservatives have lost their aspirational message.
Right.
You know, it's about victimization now. And I see a lot of young conservatives, I won't name names like Tommy Lahren, who are who victimize themselves, right?
Right.
I mean, when I was at American University, which is a very, very liberal university in Washington, D.C., I ran the College Republicans chapter. I can't tell you how many crybabies used to come up to me and say, oh, my liberal professor was so mean to me in class. It's like, get over yourself.
Yeah,
You're not a victim.
Right.
Be confident in your beliefs.
And put it forward. Well, and again, yeah, so
absolutely.
It's not.
And be honest of where you're
right.
coming from.
And so when we're talking about messaging, going back to that caller that was talking, right, it was like, it's not, I mean, our product in a way is the message, but mm-hmm. the problem is we don't go out and we're not confident, right? There's no more cultural confidence,
sure.
right?
Sure.
That we're now coming to a point where we're like, well, all these people are thinking X, Y, mm-hmm. they're thinking this way. We have to lean more over here so that we can get them instead of saying, wait a second, if I have this conversation and saying, you know, again, taking politics out of it, mm-hmm. right? Taking out even parties out of it just for a second and saying, well, can I agree with you here, here, and here? And then we'll usually come, yes, I do agree with you. Okay, well, I'm a Republican, I think that way. You're a Democrat and you think that way. Now, where is this area now that we're going to meet at, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is because, like Pavlov's dog, the media has so conditioned people that when they hear the word Republican, they act a certain way. I can go and I can have a conversation with someone and I'll be, oh, you know, you have your triggers. Oh, Bush, oh, you know, now Trump is great, right? They'll go on for 45 minutes, tire themselves out, and then I'll have my conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, while I've been listening to you guys have your conversation, Carl asked a question. Carl from Brockport. here's, you know, it's irresistible for parties to do anything that gives up power.
Mm.
And, you know, there's administering a city and appealing to the voters to let you administer the city and have the power either of the office or of that which comes with it, financial support, fundraising, and all those. I mean, those are realities.
Even if it's fake power, correct?
Well, even if it's fake power.
Yeah, I agree.
And
what do you mean by fake power?
Well,
let Don finish. Go
ahead. Let me finish. So kind of cutting through it, I want there to be a loyal opposition, both Republicans and Democrats, as a voter, as a person, because I don't want them to get along too well. Because if they get along too well, I'm not in the room when the decisions are being made, I, the voter. So I want them to debate and argue. But now it's over everything. And it's beyond silly. Not everything that the mayor does is wrong. Not everything that Trump, and I know it's somewhat irresistible, does is wrong. Not everything Obama did was wrong. And if you can get sort of to the center, now if you're running a city or a town or a big service, I got to come back. There's not a Republican or a Democratic way to do it. There's a good way to do it, an efficient way to do it, that you can take and appeal to voters to vote for you and let you be the mayor, be the supervisor.
Isn't there a progressive way to do it and a conservative way to do it?
Not initially.
Well, I mean, again,
not initially.
Whether it's garbage or, you know, again, if we're going back to those, right?
Not initially.
There can be a big government solution. And
I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And I hearken back to this because it wasn't always that way. Town of Greece got into recycling in the 70s when that was not popular as a conservative Republican thing to do, but it made sense. All right. So it would be thought of as progressive. We got into it because I would go down to Long Island and pick their brains. And they were 10 years ahead of local governments around here out of necessity. What are we doing with our garbage and so on and so forth? So that's what I'm talking about. The article that we were here to kick around is how can the Republicans and conservatives appeal to city voters and get back some of that power. And I think the way to do it is to show that they can, as Tommy said earlier, they can run the show better, more efficiently, better performance, get better mileage out of everything they did in government.
All right, but this is where I have to jump in.
Yeah.
We're late for a break, and when we come back, on the point that Don just made, that there's not a Republican or a Democratic way to govern a city. There's a good way and a bad way. There's an efficient way and there's an inefficient way. One of Rochester City Councilmen emails the program to say he disagrees, and he's going to push back on that. He's a Democrat, as you know. It's Mitch Gruber. So we'll get Mitch's point on the other side of this break. We'll come back. We'll see what Don, Tom, Aisha have to say. They've all been involved in political strategy, conservatives and Republicans. And why we're here is National Review's Kevin Williamson wrote a piece saying, we'll always have Fort Worth, the largest city in Texas that Republicans can win right now. And he says, we've got to get back to winning cities. We are so polarized. And so it's a conversation about how conservatives can make a dent in America's cities that have moved very politically to the left. So let's have that only break, and we're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about cancer treatment and gaps in support for those with cancer. The biggest gap comes in an area that I did not expect, and maybe you wouldn't expect it either. I assumed it would be childhood cancer, but the biggest gap in social support is young adults. Well, 15 to 39, adolescents and young adults. Why is that? Why are the results essentially so bad? How can we change that? We'll discuss it next hour. All right, welcome back to Connections. The email is flowing here on what conservatives can do to win back America's cities. Mitch Gruber is a member of Rochester City Council. He's a Democrat. He says his view is this. Let's be clear. Republicans don't care about public transport because they don't believe in the public sector. Their foolish strategy for almost everything is privatize, privatize, privatize. So when it comes to what Mitch is really saying here, Don, is, you know, when it comes to governing a city, there is a conservative way and there is a liberal way, because if you are a liberal or a progressive, you are more likely to favor public transport because you'd be more concerned about expending public resources to help people in poverty sort of move out of poverty. Whereas if you're a conservative, the trope is you're more for sort of clearing the deck, getting government out of the way and letting people make individual decisions.
Yeah.
And what Mitch is saying is that's reflected in your love of the private sector versus the public sector, and that impacts public transportation.
I've spent half of my life working in the public sector and half of my life in the private sector, and while working in the private sector and then going back into the public sector, I took some incredible lessons about getting to the bottom line and being a lot more efficient. But by definition, public transportation and public, those kinds of issues it can't be quite as efficient as a balance sheet, because they have to do extraordinary things and do things of a public nature. But to his point, a Republican governor, Nelson Rockefeller, established all the public transportation authorities across the state because the private bus company in Rochester failed and went on strike in 1961. The city never had a public transportation system. It was Rochester Transit. It was privately owned. They had a massive strike, leaving thousands of people. So Republicans, maybe Rockefeller was the last progressive Republican, he established public transportation. I don't think Republicans walk away and insist that everything can be privately done.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Would you agree, Don, that there's some things that the government is supposed to do, and I think what we on the right, one of the problems is that we think that too often the things that the public transportation, things that are public that are supposed to happen, they just keep heaping on, right? It's like things like roads, bridges, things like that. Yeah, those are things that the government can do, but it's when you start adding on all the extras that they can't then efficiently do the things that government is supposed to do. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, one example was during my tenure, there was always a movement to have light rail. And I wasn't against light rail. I would have done anything that made sense and had fun, and we could attract federal dollars for. But it was impossible to make it run efficiently, even not even close. But I wasn't against light rail because it was it's thought of as a relatively liberal concept to have light rail.
That's probably because, like you said, they wanted to push it whether it's efficient or not.
Well, but that's okay. But you don't you don't have to do it.
Right. You don't have. Well, that's what I'm saying. But then we get put in a box saying, oh, you're against something, when you're like, well, I'm not against it. What I'm looking for is a good plan that's going to efficiently use tax dollars that aren't going to overburden the government, right,
yeah.
or make it bigger than what it should. But if you can do it in a way that is going to be helpful to the public, that is going to keep it reasonable so that taxes aren't out of control and different things, then we're for it.
But I'm optimistic enough to believe that if Republican Party, the party I was born in and will die in, put really good candidates up against Mitch and some of the other folks on city council, we couldn't win some of those seats. Based on, we'll do a better job running the city.
We will run the city better is the message.
Yeah.
Well, so let me read from Pew Research that indicates maybe there is a ceiling for liberals winning in rural areas and right now, with the way America is sort of constructed, and conservatives winning in cities. This is from Pew Research. Quote, it is an enduring stereotype. Conservatives prefer suburban McMansions while liberals like urban enclaves, but one that is grounded in some reality. Given the choice, 75% of consistent conservatives say they would opt to live in a community where the houses are larger and farther apart and school, stores, and restaurants are several miles away. Just 22% of consistent conservatives say they would choose to live where the houses are smaller and closer to each other and schools, stores, and restaurants are within walking distance. The preferences of consistent liberals are almost the exact inverse. 77% of consistent liberals prefer the smaller house closer to amenities. Just 21% opt for more square footage farther away from everything. So if that is true, and I think, again, I'm not questioning Pew's polling there, is there a ceiling here? What do you do with that, Tom?
You believe it, right?
Okay. But policy-wise, does that mean there's a limit to what conservatives are going to appeal in cities and there's a limit to how liberals are going to appeal in rural areas?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure, I think so. You know, there's two types of people, I think, in politics. There's mathematicians and then there's, I mean, I don't want to derogate priests, but there are people that think we can pull off miracles everywhere and there are people that think we can't pull off miracles anywhere. Right. So there's the mathematician in me said the priest in me says we have to try everywhere at every time. We have to spread our message everywhere and hope we can win everywhere. But the realist in me that looks at data like that, and I think there's a movement just generally across the political spectrum, we're ignoring data. And I think that's very perilous, especially when you get into election stuff. You know, there is a ceiling, I think, for conservative appeal in cities, just as there is a ceiling for liberal appeal in rural places. I live in a big city. I live in Washington. And, you know, you have to be a masochist to be a conservative and live there, right? Just because of how different the values of the city are from what you hold in your heart. And I think that's a big root of this, is it's really about where you live defines your politics. Who knows where the independents live, right?
So, but that brings us back to the, you know, that full circle there is because liberals happen to like to live in the city more, right? Closer together, looking at that data, doesn't mean that someone can't go from being a liberal to a conservative.
Well, sure.
That is the question. That is the challenge.
And they can, and they do.
And I think what Tom is saying is understand the data. It is a very hard nut to crack for liberals when they go rural and for conservatives when they go urban.
And what I'm saying is once you in politics, you have to develop a strategy that will, that will let you win with the least amount of effort expended, right? And at what point does it become a lost cause for us to dump money in, say, defeating someone like Mitch Gruber? Right, recruiting a candidate, dumping a bunch of money, or just keep our total dominance in the county legislature. You know what I mean? You have to make a trade-off.
Well, see, then I guess that's the difference because I'm a people person, and I don't think that giving up the well-being of people, right? And it's not the priest in me; it's just being a realist is saying, no, I have a better solution so that you can have a better life.
And
if I, again, I'm going to go back. I didn't get to say it, but I'm going to try and do this really quick. It's like being the absentee father, right? Republicans, we went and we gave up urban cities and we said there's too much effort being expended, right? Again, the Democrats went from the party of lynching us. They lynched my people, right? For the, slavery, right? I mean, like,
Later than that.
Right, up into the 60s, right?
Yes.
And 30s and 60s, right?
Yes.
So the Democrats, and what did they do? For 30 years, they ground it down, and they went in there and they knew that they were going to get lambasted, and they did. But you know what? They wanted that territory. They wanted that ground. And so they went for 30 years and they were in there.
How did they capture that ground?
They're constantly there. We are not constantly
there.
No,
no, no. It's not a presence problem. I think it's
yes,
a,
it is.
It's a messaging problem.
They were there.
You don't think that the fact that Democrats advocate for a larger social safety net has anything to do with them performing better in areas that are more impoverished?
Well, it's a spider web. It's not a safety net now.
No, no, no. But, I know, and I agree with you, but it's difficult to do what you did and move up the ladder on your own, right? It's easier to say, yeah, it is.
It's not.
Sure, it is.
It's not. You know
for
what?
For a lot of people, it is.
But you know, but again, that goes back to a messaging issue. I had people around me that said, I mean, my grandmother, she didn't care. My grandmother had a third grade education and grew up picking cotton in the cotton field.
Yeah.
And let me tell her, come home and tell her how, oh, that white man didn't like me or someone's being racist to me. She'd be like, I don't care. Then if you have to work five times as hard to get half as much, you better work 10 times as hard and get what is owed to you.
But I think Democrats want a world where you don't have to do that. That's
okay.
The point. I understand. And the can-do message, I think, is vital for anybody who's struggling. The left is saying, we are acknowledging that what you just said, Aisha, that if you've got to work five times as hard to get half as much, we got a big structural inequality in
but
this country.
But everybody has to do that. Everybody has one of those
I did not
things.
Have to. I had to work half as hard as some people.
Okay, but
I had a dad who could call at my college and get me in when I was waitlisted.
But you know what? Now my kids don't have to.
It's true.
No, but now my kids, they don't have to work. They can work a third as hard as I had to work. And that's the goal, right? And again, that does kind of go back to what Don was saying with the family.
And you're
thing.
Saying it's your values that are going to get our cities to that point.
Yes.
Where the kids
Republican
and the subsequent
values,
generations.
Republican values are going to get people to that point outside of Democrat. There's no way that the Democrat values, in my humble opinion, are going to get people to that point because they're always putting people in boxes. They're always victimizing people. You are always in a perpetual state
of
victimhood and dependency. Yeah. And until the moment that you say, listen, I get it. I want it to be equal, but until it is equal, you do what you have to do and don't sit around and have a pretty party. Like he was, Tom, what you were saying with the Republicans, with your Republican Party coming. Okay, if your teacher is giving you a hard time and, you know.
Then make your case.
Make your case. Yeah. Do what you have to do. Parent, quit. Pull your kid out of that. If I'm paying the university for you to indoctrinate my child in a way that I don't feel right, stop paying for your kid to go there. But they don't because you have a whole system that says, oh, you have to have a college education. Well, you don't, though. The BOCES programs, there's lots of things that people can do where you may not need a college education.
All right, so I'm just going to try to rip through a little bit more feedback. Verona says, want to appeal to city residents, young and old? Conservatives need to speak out against racism and bigotry, which is becoming the number one stain on your party. Yes or no?
No.
Okay, done?
I mean, it's not the number one stain.
If there's a single person on the face of the earth that thinks that the Republican Party or a Republican abides by racism or any of that, shame on us. So, yeah, I think we have to make it very, very clear. But we also can't be labeled racist for much, much more minor things.
So the label gets thrown around too broadly.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and yes, the discourse is coarse, but yeah, and there's a reason why my little kids won't show me how to tweet. You know, but
I'll show you how to tweet.
But for the first time, Evan, we're getting splash back from a federal president. Reagan was very conservative and others, but the Trump thing is a splashback that the Republicans are going to have to deal with at the local level too. They're being cast is being cast very broadly.
Okay, Tom?
I agree with Don.
Okay. So some final thoughts here because we're down to our last 2 minutes here. And listeners, for those already asking, are we going to flip this panel and talk about how progressives can win in rural areas? And that day, I want all phone calls from rural listeners. I want rural conservatives to tell us why they're not voting with the left here.
But
so
they
we'll flip it. The rural voters are voting with the left. Rural America's red.
We're losing ground left and right.
Well, okay, fair enough. I mean, when Democrats win in Kansas, something
is
changing.
Yeah, we are losing ground.
Okay, but so 30 seconds apiece. You're going to try to win in cities. Pipe dream, or you can do it. How are you going to do it?
right now with the incivility, I think it's a pipe dream, but I think we can get there by listening to each other and by partnering with each other. I'm not saying be bipartisan. I'm saying be confident in your conservative beliefs, go forth and try and do good, and I think good things will come.
Yeah. Okay, Don Riley.
In Rochester, not abroad, across the country, I think we should run really strong Republican candidates for mayor and for city council and for school board. Real strong, good candidates.
Okay, Aisha.
I agree. We don't run any candidates, and I think that is shame on us. And yes, I do believe that we can win, and I think that a big part of that is being present in every single area that we can and stop leaving a vacuum for progressives to fill that vacuum.
You want the every city, every state, every county strategy?
No, yeah, like, again,
not seating
I'm
any
not
ground.
Even a, I,
not seating
I have
any
plenty
ground.
Of ideas that the Republican Party, right, they've given up on urban communities, period.
Okay. And by the way, as we close here, Kevin Williamson's piece invoked the great Alex P. Keaton.
That's all yes, great yes. there.
So Kevin Williamson said, Alex P. Keaton, or in the real world, William F. Buckley, never worried about being denounced as an elitist. Ambition for advancement and the wealth and status that comes with it was, until 5 minutes ago, part and parcel of American conservatism. That was the best message American conservatives ever had. Being rich and happy is awesome. Here's how you can do it, too.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
That's part of the Reagan conservative message.
Kevin's a little bit of an elitist, but I think that he's generally right on this point. Yeah.
I want to thank our guests for being here. Tom Hebert, who is a Federal Affairs Associate for Americans for Tax Reform. Thank you.
Thanks for taking
the
time.
Appreciate it. Aisha Kreutz, who is not only a local activist, but founder of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of New York. Thank you for being here. Let's do it again.
Yes.
And Don Riley, Vice President of Mark IV Enterprises, and the rest of the resume is too long to read. Thank you, Don. Nice seeing
you. Thank you, Evan.
Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas.
Short break. Merry Christmas to you, too. Short break. More connections coming up.